Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza, via remote on this pre-recorded program from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, November 10, 2020. A senior South Sudanese politician resigns from the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition.
It is a betrayal to the administration in the sense that the general public will really understand that things are not going on well within that specific party.
And the new Sudanese ambassador to the United States says the internal problems of Sudan will be resolved.
We knew since the beginning that it was not going to be an easy task to rebuild the economy that has been devastated, literally devastated, by 3 decades of mismanagement and corruption. And personally, since the beginning, I was saying it will take us at least 3 to 5 years.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A senior member of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, SPLM-IO, has resigned. Peter Tingo Limbo accused the party's leader, Riek Machar, of single-handedly running the movement. Tingo says the SPLM-IO has no transparency in its decision-making process. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Tingo Peter Limbo released his letter of resignation today without declaring loyalty to any side. In the letter, Limbo wrote that over the last 7 years, Machar has run the SPLM-IO with zero transparency, especially when it comes to making decisions. He said Machar did not respect institutional structures established by the party's constitution. He said Machar's leadership style has led to lack of progress and that repeated calls for change has fallen on deaf ears. Abraham Kwolnyon, an economic associate professor at the University of Juba, says frustration within the SPLM-IO political system has been mounting for some time, which he says has led to mistrust among citizens.
It is a betrayal to the administration in the sense that the general public will really understand that things are not going on well within that specific party. And as a result of this, it will reduce the level of trust that the people have within the senior management of the IO party. And this is going to have impact in the political engagement across the country. Because as the people are going to end the transitional period, many people will be doubting the ability of the SPLM-IO to deliver a good service.
Nyon says from the look of things, the SPLM-IO will still be seeing more resignations as frustrations mount among party members.
There are high chances that mostly there are other people who could be able to resign, but my reservation is that when people resign in South Sudan, they don't resign because of something bad that they have seen per se, but they resign because maybe they are not being treated well by the people who are their leaders, or they are not benefiting from whatever the party that they have.
Nyon says party members might also be bought off by other parties. Limbo left Juba this morning for Khartoum, according to SPLM-IO sources, who declined to be identified for safety reasons. Limbo's phones have been switched off. Repeated calls to SPLM-IO spokesman Manawa Peter got caught when unanswered. Machar's spokesman James Gadet Dark, when contacted for comments, all his phones are not reachable. SPLM-IO senior official Stephen Kwol Parr told South Sudan in Focus he is not the official spokesperson for the party to comment on the Secretary General's resignation. The SPLM-IO has witnessed several resignations of party members in recent months, including military generals. David Scherer, the head of the UN mission in South Sudan, warned last month that the peace agreement is limping along, noting government and rebel forces who are supposed to form a unified South Sudan force are stuck in training centers without adequate resources. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The Sudanese transitional government has expressed concern over the escalating violence in neighboring Ethiopia's Tigray region. The officials call on all the parties in Ethiopia to stop fighting and resolve their dispute through negotiations. Khartoum is urging regional leaders and the international community to help restore peace and stability in Ethiopia. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Sudan's government says it worries the fighting between the Ethiopian government and the Tigray People's Liberation Front, or TPLF, which has continued for a week, will escalate. Sudanese officials held a defense and security meeting chaired by the head of Sudan's Sovereign Council, Abdul Fattah al-Burhan, in Khartoum on Monday. Speaking shortly after the meeting, Sudanese Defense Minister Ibrahim Yassin said Sudan is urging Ethiopia's federal government and the regional government in Tigray to refrain from violence and find a peaceful solution to the conflict.
Sudan is concerned about the ongoing tension in neighboring Ethiopia, and we urge all the rivals to use wisdom, restraint, and to resort to a peaceful solution. The Sudanese government is also very concerned about the impact of the ongoing fighting in Ethiopia.
On Thursday, local authorities in Sudan's Kassala state closed its border at Wedelhileo border crossing with neighboring Ethiopia. Kassala State Acting Governor Fath al-Rahman al-Lamin said a local committee was formed to monitor the situation along the border and possibly assist in receiving civilians who might be fleeing violence in Ethiopia. Yassin says Sudan will continue encouraging both sides in Ethiopia to engage in talks in order to stop the bloodshed and the displacement of thousands of civilians.
Sudan will continue its efforts to call upon the parties to engage in direct negotiations. We also call upon the regional and international community to carry out their moral duty to support peace and stability in the region and to strengthen peace opportunities in neighboring Ethiopia.
Abdul Munem Abu Idris, a longtime political analyst and Sudanese journalist specializing in the Horn of Africa issues, says the escalation in violence in the Tigray region could affect Sudan's Kassala and Gadarif states and might create insecurity along the border, which he says could lead to a humanitarian crisis in the area.
There is already an existing tribal conflict in those two Sudanese states, and the border between the two countries has been witnessing firearm smuggling and human trafficking. So any insecurity in neighboring Tigray could increase the levels of these illegal practices.
Abu Idris says there are already unconfirmed reports about the first influx of Ethiopian citizens arriving into Sudanese territories over the past few days. He says the arrival of more Ethiopian refugees could escalate tensions along the border.
More Ethiopian asylum seekers would be expected to arrive in the coming few days because Sudan is the nearest safe haven for them and they know the geography of the area very well. Within the first 48 hours, we have heard about the first group of refugees arriving in Sudan through the border with Kassala and Gadarif State.
Sudanese authorities were expected to intervene in the conflict and reciprocate Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's support to helping stabilize Sudan after the oust of former President Omar al-Bashir, according to Abu Idris. He says since Sudanese Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok is chairman of the regional bloc IGAD, it would be a moral obligation for him to bring the two Ethiopian rivals to the negotiation table. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has also expressed concern about escalating violence in Ethiopia. At UN headquarters in New York yesterday, Stephen Dujarric, spokesperson for the Secretary General, said Guterres spoke with Prime Minister Hamdok in his capacity as the chairman of IGAD and the chairperson of the African Union Commission, Moussa Faki Mohamed, along with President Cyril Ramaphosa of South Africa as the chair of African Union. He said Guterres expressed the UN's readiness to support the IGAD and the AU in any initiative to address the situation. Dujarric warned the area could witness a humanitarian crisis as there are nearly 9 million people at a high risk of living near the area of conflict. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Still on Sudan, the new Sudanese ambassador to the United States says any opposition to Sudan's move to normalize relations with Israel will be handled through dialogue. Nuruddin Sati says it is high time for Sudan to be at peace with its enemies. Ambassador Sati says Umar Party's rejection of Sudan's move to normalize relations with Israel should not be an obstacle He says Umma Party leader Sadiq al-Mahdi should accept the realities in Sudan.
Let me, before moving further, just wish him good health. He has been diagnosed with COVID-19 a few days ago, and he has been medically evacuated to the UAE 2 days ago. He is a person with whom I have good personal relations, and I with him and his family. So I wish him and his family good health. So this is very important to me. The second thing is that, my brother, times have changed. And we have, for the last 60, 70 years, been in a kind of a hostile and antagonistic relations in the region. And it's high time that we try something else. Sudan now is building a new democracy and it's opening up to the regional and international community. And we'd like to change course, because so far what we have been doing since independence in 1966 has taken us nowhere.
The civilian and the military government in Sudan promised a lot for the Sudanese people, but it appears like these promises are not being fulfilled. For instance, the economy of the country is still in tatters. And if you look at the media environment in Khartoum, my colleagues who are journalists in Khartoum say they still face the same intimidation and threats from security officials. What is new?
We knew since the beginning that it was not going to be an easy task to rebuild the economy that has been devastated, literally devastated, by 3 decades of mismanagement and corruption. And personally, since the beginning, I was saying it will take us at least 3 to 5 years in order to be able to come to a reasonable degree of economic stability. So we are working on that. Realistically, it will take a few years before we get to a satisfactory level of economic stability. As to the freedom of the press, it is guaranteed by law. Personally, I have been following this very closely. And I have seen that even some of the, newspapers and radio and TV, stations and all that were more or less, aligned on the previous regime are allowed to function. And they are there and they are criticizing the government in a very violent manner sometimes. And none of them have been taken to court. Or to be imprisoned.
I am referring here to a protest when the Sudanese protested in October to commemorate the 1964 coup of Ibrahim Aboud, and the roads were closed and journalists were pushed. Some journalists were even beaten by the police when they were covering the protests. That's what I'm talking about.
There's an investigation that has been started, and some of the police officers and those who are responsible for those incidents actually have been suspended from their job, and this investigation is ongoing. But I assure you, my brother, this is not the formal policy, official policy of the government. And I apologize for anything that might have affected your colleagues working there. And I am sure that my ministers there have spoken to them already and explained to them exactly what the situation was.
Let's change gears here and move forward on the question of Darfur. A lot of Sudanese would say the elephant in the room in Sudan is the question of Darfur. I know that former President Omar al-Bashir and some of his cabinet members are behind the bars and are being questioned about some issues in Sudan. But there are people who have been in Darfur actively, if you like, fighting alongside the government, and they are still free. I'm talking of one gentleman called Hemeti. He's free in Khartoum. What's going on?
Well, the recent signing of the peace agreement that happened in Juba, I'm sure you followed that with your colleagues also, has involved also some of the the Darfur armed groups who have been fighting for the same cause as the one for which the revolution has taken place. Now we are starting, turning a new page in Darfur, where we are now working on a plan for the protection of civilians. The war has stopped in Darfur. We are turning a new page, and certain decisions have been taken in order to practice some kind of policies that would compensate the people of Darfur for the losses that they have incurred during the last so many decades. So a complete turnaround in Darfur. As to other issues concerning justice and all that, we are now working on a kind of transitional justice process that would involve all those concerned in what happened in Darfur, during the last 20, 30 years. And this transitional justice will address those issues in a way that would, guarantee that justice is being delivered, but at the same time that preserve the security and reconcile the people of Darfur and the people of Sudan around the basic issues, the fundamental issues of the revolution.
That's Nureddin Sati, Sudanese ambassador to the United States. He spoke with me from Washington last week. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, residents of Juba who need COVID-19 certificates say social distancing is a foreign language in South Sudan. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. Question today.
If you could be famous, what would you like to be famous for?
I don't know if I want to be famous for anything in particular, but I think being famous in a way that is beneficial to other people, say, be famous for having like a really solid foundation that in turn inspires other people to also give back.
I would like to be famous for inventing new things, coming up with new and innovative ideas.
I'd wish to be a vibrant politician in my country, and I would wish to be known for being a very good politician.
I would love to be famous in the sector of acting, like as an actor. I'd love to be an inspiration to others. Yeah, I like to inspire people.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. And in our Tuesday health segment, we look at COVID-19 tests in Juba. Some South Sudanese seeking to know their COVID-19 status say social distancing is a big problem at the National Public Health Laboratory where COVID-19 tests are performed. One resident of Juba town who has been to the facility says there are simply no structures to ensure people follow COVID-19 preventive guidelines while waiting for test results. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Mutula Ruchan, Kalima Robert.
A health official at the National Public Health Laboratory calls out the names of people waiting to be tested for COVID-19 and asks them to enter the sample collection room. Hundreds of people who are standing around in the facility to either get tested or receive the results are not practicing social distancing, and about 90% of them are not wearing face masks. Children who are brought here with their parents appear tired or bored. Several are crying. Juba resident Bure Ajo, who has visited the facility, says no structures are in place to ensure that people who come to get tested follow COVID-19 preventive guidelines as they wait to provide the samples or collect their results.
not well organized. I think you need a bit of structure. Line, you come in, you register, and you go by there. Also, when you get the result, system is not like, for example, I'm now here, seen yesterday, came back this morning again, and the results are not there. Just keep it in. They just come and pick people they know and they like. They take them inside.
Alima Wall, a mother who is carrying her 8-month-old baby, has stood in the queue for several hours. She says workers at the facility do not organize the crowd to prevent transmission of the virus. Wall says situation at the testing facility makes it difficult for vulnerable people like pregnant women or those with small children to be given priority.
We have 3 days here today. We got registered. Our samples have been collected and we are expecting to collect the results today. The form is still inside there. We come here every morning and stay until the afternoon.
Manyokwai, another South Sudanese resident who came to the National Public Health Laboratory to get tested for COVID-19, says he worries about contracting the disease at the facility.
If you came negative, there are high chances of being positive here. That's a problem. So in short, it's not a good feeling, of course. So if the system that is set for taking the test is not as functioning as it should be, then something's definitely wrong, so it needs to be addressed.
South Sudan health officials in charge of the COVID-19 response say they are aware of the crowds and are trying to ensure that people who come to the facility are not exposed to transmission of the virus. Matthew Toot, deputy manager at the Public Health Emergency Center, says his office hopes to announce restrictions to ensure that the sample collection center is safe within the next week.
If you don't have a mask, you will not be allowed to enter the site. And make sure that you have a mask. You don't have a mask, you will not be allowed to enter the site, and then your sample will not be collected, which will affect your intended mission.
Toot urges people to stand at least 6 feet apart and to wash their hands before they come to the center.
We have facilities for hand washing. We also need to use those facilities. We are going to work with all the relevant authorities to make sure that we cooperate and we keep our people safe.
On Sunday, South Sudan recorded 2,980 cases of COVID-19. Out of that number, 2,673 people have recovered. The country has recorded 59 deaths so far. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
From Sydney, we move to United States, where world leaders have been giving their reaction to the victory of Joe Biden in the U.S. presidential election. But as Henry Ridgewell reports from London, some U.S. rivals, including China and Russia, are waiting for the outcome of legal challenges to the result.
Champagne corks were popping in Ballinar, Ireland, Saturday, as the election results were being announced. The small coastal town was the home of Joe Biden's great-great-great-grandfather, and relatives of the president-elect celebrated their transatlantic success, including Biden's third cousin, Loretta Blewett.
All of a sudden yesterday, it just hit us out of the blue, so it was exciting, but we're absolutely thrilled and just can't really put it into words, really.
Biden has often spoken of his pride in his Irish roots. He has warned Britain that its exit from the European Union must not jeopardise peace in Northern Ireland. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said Sunday he was looking forward to working with the new administration.
I think there is far more that unites the government of this country and governments in Washington any stage than divides us.
The European Union Commission President Ursula von der Leyen also welcomed the projected election victory of Joe Biden.
Together, we will address pressing global challenges. The corona pandemic and its economic consequences, climate change and the loss of biodiversity, the necessary rule book for the digital economy and society, global security, and the reform of the rules-based multilateral system.
But Europe should not necessarily expect an easy ride, says analyst Inderjeet Palmer of City University London.
Given the increasingly competitive environment, I think the US will continue to drive hard bargains. The trade agreements with the EU and Britain will be not easy. And I think NATO, yes, I think they will demand the European step up a lot more.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel appeared to acknowledge those challenges Monday.
Amerika ist und bleibt unser wichtigster Verbündeter.
She said that America is and remains Germany and Europe's most important ally. But it expects us, and rightly so, to make stronger efforts to take care of our security, she added. Europe hopes that Biden will seek to rejoin the Iran nuclear deal. Israel is vehemently opposed. In a video message congratulating Biden, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu did not mention the agreement. Netanyahu said he had known Biden for 40 years and described him as a big friend of the State of Israel. Iran's Foreign Minister Javad Zarif gave his reaction on Twitter. Trump's gone in 70 days, but we'll remain here forever. Betting on outsiders to provide security is never a good gamble. We extend our hand to our neighbours for dialogue to resolve differences, he wrote. China is in the midst of a trade war with Washington. Chinese state media said the election of Biden offered more predictability. In Hong Kong, where pro-democracy protests continue against Beijing, some fear a softer approach from the United States. Hong Kong resident Hoi, who did not want to give his family name, said, "I think at a time when totalitarian governance is rising in many countries, Biden's approach, though more peaceful or less forceful, is too gentlemanly." Both Beijing and Moscow have yet to give official comments on the election results, noting that there are ongoing legal challenges to the result by President Donald Trump. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Yin Lak Mama by Sunnyman.
When I call my low, when I call in, in your leg, in your leg, oh mama, in your leg, mama, in your leg, oh yeah, in your leg, mama. Enti ara mente nangre, apu tiang kapalo ino, in your leg, mama. Ina yale mwodye, ina yale mama. Ke chalwe wa mama, ke chalwe wa mama. En chinom kon mar, chinom mar. Nerune riage, ina telwok ba wabay tipiak. Mama ine iro, ina kukulya, kukulya. Yalwe le jadit kungenyi gwop, pale anawa indye. Mama anangote ne mentindu, ina yale mama. Ina yale mwodye, ina yale mama. Enki ara nente nangye, apuotia nkebaluo ino. Ina yale mama, ina yale mwodye, ina yale mama. Aneta groki mama, onje chei wa mojduli. Gurot buo pakao, jel chei cha mojim. Inti duor beto mama, acan jal be dia umodia. Kutua miole miole, mohen mama dia. Ina yale mama, ina yale mbodia.
We've been listening to Sunnyman with the song Yin Lak Mama. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you must leave your house. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Ina ya lady Moria, Ina ya lady Mama, and Tiara Mentrenandre, a poor young Kabalua, you know, Ina ya lady Mama, Ina ya lady Moria, Ina ya lady.